Good morning. Today is Thursday, October the 15th. Joining us this morning on this newfangled thing called the telephone, Fred Van Vleck. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Sort of.
Well, no. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, okay. I got you. Yeah, happy to be there.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
Last time, baby. Last time. I'm going to have to entice you with food or something here. Winston,
Well, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes. This morning I'm actually sandwiched in. I've got a meeting immediately after, and so that's why I opted for the telephone. I just for the record, I'm regularly coming to work. It has nothing to do with that at all. You know, the social distancing piece, et cetera, et cetera.
So, but we're just not a high enough priority here at the radio station and in our audience to warrant an in-person visit.
Now, wait a second. You told me you just didn't want to see me and you preferred the phone.
Nice try. All righty, Winston, why do we say it?
Got a school-themed one here, so, Fred, pressure's going to be on you even more so. How did the numbers 11, 12, and the other teens get that name?
That's about all I got.
Yeah, okay. Does it have to do with Greek or Roman? No? All right, I'm shot.
11 comes from leave one. You count the 10 fingers, and that just leaves one. 12 is trois, or two left. 13 is 3 plus 10, and so on.
Oh, math skills. Well, no wonder I couldn't figure it out.
Well, the problem is I couldn't get ever past 10 because I ran out of fingers.
Yeah, yeah.
I should have come up with the 11. Yes.
No, I was going five. I got five on this hand. I got five over here. I got five on the foot. Five on the foot. Who needs more than five?
Well, I don't think any of us need more than five fingers or toes.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope not. So what's keeping your life interesting these days?
Oh, there's lots of stuff going on that keeps life interesting. And probably what is on the forefront of interesting for us is our transition into the in-person learning. And so we've actually been slow as far as the transition into in-person learning, but we do have many students on our campuses. And so what the transition that we're making in the direction that the board provided for us that they wanted us to do is bring in students for face-to-face instruction who need intervention or are in equipment-dependent classes. And so let me talk about what an equipment-dependent class is.
The lab.
An equipment-dependent class is primarily at the high school, and that would be like your woodshop class, auto class, welding, ag mechanics, culinary arts where they're doing the kitchen, some of our fine arts classes, some of our classes that are dependent on software where they don't have the high dollar software at home, those sorts of things. And so the one thing, you know, that was really disappointing to us, we just finished it's a big ag facility. And what it has is three full-size classrooms in it and a full-size brand new ag shop. We were fortunate enough to get a grant from the state to match our local dollars, so it was half paid for by the state, and so a great example of maximizing our local dollars through state dollars. And it's finished, and it was really frustrating at the beginning of the year to see that building just sit there vacant with those students in it. So it's really exciting now that the floral class, because that's an equipment-dependent class, is coming in and socially distancing in small groups of students and doing their floral arrangements inside one of those classrooms. It's exciting to see some of the advanced ag mechanics students coming in, checking out some of that equipment. You would not believe the equipment that's inside that shop. It's phenomenal. I would venture to say of new shops, this shop would probably rank in the top 10 easy as far as state-of-the-art high school shops in the state of California, and maybe even in the top five right now. It's a phenomenal facility.
Do you have the ability now to have the kids in that facility, or is it limited, or you know, other than some of the classes that you were alluding to?
It's definitely limited, but the students are coming in. The advanced ag mechanics classes, which are the upper level classes that are coming in to use that facility right now, and really what they're doing is just basically learning what some of this new equipment is. I think, you know, I used to be a shop teacher. In fact, that's what I used to teach was welding. And the equipment that's in this shop now compared to the equipment when I taught welding 20 years ago, it's night and day. I'm starting to feel like a dinosaur now. It's just unbelievable the equipment that gets inside this shop. It's just, wow.
Have you had a chance, Fred, to bring in, I mean, you're mentioning welding, guys like O&M and some of the employers and the businesses in the area that use that, or maybe not that specific equipment, but who operate in those fields, and have them walk through and look at it and see and either get excited or point things out that might be able to compress the learning curve?
So yes and no. Yes, the industry was a part of designing the shop and designing the equipment that came in there. Kyle Schamp, who's a teacher over there, worked with industry partners to figure out what type of equipment to bring inside of the shop. But as far as people coming in and actually touring the facility yet, we haven't done it, just because where we're at with COVID, and especially now with students in there, we're trying to do the best we can to not cross-pollinate, if you will, students and community and do all of those sorts of things just as an abundance of caution. We're excited to get the students in right now in those small groups and start moving that forward. And frankly, that just started happening this week in that shop. So this is something that's brand new as far as getting students in there.
And getting them used to the concept of coming back to the campus. I would suspect that that's part of the awakening as well. KINS.
I think they're getting used to that quick.
There you go. It's 8:19. We'll be back with more from Fred.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. So, Fred, you got the ag building up and being partially used or used to its greatest efficiencies as currently defined. What are you hearing from the state about when they are going to allow that next level? Because I know the county is creeping that way. Does the State Board of Education parallel the local jurisdiction, or do they have their own standards that they put into play?
So are you talking specifically about students coming back to in-person instruction?
Because you've got your school board that dictates, you got the state board that dictates, you got the county that strongly recommends. Yeah, so you got three or four different competing references, and it doesn't seem to me like a lot of that is in concert. How do you kind of right. ease into it slowly without having to go back to the board and, you know, okay, can we have the home ec class now? Can we open up kindergarten now? Go piecemeal rather than just a overarching understanding?
Right. So the way the system works is right now the state only mandates that you not open schools if you're in the purple category. So there's four colors, purple, red, orange, and yellow. And those are the four colors or phases of where each of the counties are at as far as COVID. And I think most people out there know that we're in the yellow phase, which is the lowest phase. And this is something that I don't think that most people know. Less than 1% of the population of California is in either an orange phase or a yellow phase. And so we're very fortunate up here on the North Coast to be in a yellow phase. And what the state has said is you need to either be in the yellow, orange, or red in order for schools to open up. If you're in the purple phase, schools cannot open up. And so, obviously, right now we're in the yellow, and we could move back and forth between yellow and orange. And I think Dr. Brankovich has predicted that there's a likelihood we're right on the cusp of yellow and orange. And so I think there's a likelihood that we could go back and forth between yellow and orange. But as far as the state is concerned, they say if you choose to open schools, you can. And so then it becomes a local decision, and you have to follow within the parameters of both state public health and county public health if the local schools choose to open. And so a for instance of that is Fortuna Union High School District has chosen to open. They've been open since the beginning of the school year, and that becomes a local decision of the school board. And so the state basically has said, yes, Eureka City Schools, you can open. Our board at this point has said that we can only do a hybrid opening. And that is much of what I was talking about before the break on bringing back students for in-person interventions and equipment-dependent classes. The board is going to revisit this again a week from this coming Tuesday to make a determination if we're going to step into it any further. Right now, for instance, we have quite a few kindergarten students starting to come back on our campuses in small groups in the afternoons. For some of that face-to-face instruction. And so the board will discuss whether or not they want to broaden that anymore and bring any further students back. The other group of students that we have back is that our Winslow Children's Center, the preschool, which is over there behind the old Eureka Mall, Winco, it's open for in-person instruction. And so there is pockets across the district where students are coming in, doing that in-person learning, and we're moving forward with that. But we certainly have not arrived at the point where we're doing in-person learning across the district. And what a lot of people forget is we can't just turn on full-on in-person learning on the drop of a hat. And one of our biggest struggles has been, believe it or not, it's been in the personal protective equipment and getting the air filtration. The new gold right now is there's two types of filters we're using. Most people have heard of a HEPA filter. And then the other type of filter that we're using in our HVAC systems is what's called a MERV 13. And the people that are in the MERV 13 filter and HEPA filter business right now are just knocking it out of the park because they are like gold. And we've been trying ever since the beginning of the school year trying to get those in, and we're getting a good chunk of those in because if students are in person in a classroom, they have to have either a HEPA filter in the classroom or that MERV 13 filtering out that air. So it's a challenge to try to get all this stuff there. We're just about there where the equipment won't be a limiting factor as far as whether or not we open school, and then it just becomes a pure choice of the board, and the decisions the board has to make is balancing that student and staff safety with the learning needs of the students.
The investments that are being made now, are they perceived to be temporary or permanent?
Well, the HEPA filters are certainly temporary because, I mean, they're disposable items. It's you put them in and you run them for a while, and then you have to replace them. So that's something that.
But the machine isn't going to wear out in 6 months.
Well, it depends on which one you're talking about. The HEPA filter just goes in; it goes straight in place. Like think of your house heating system. You have one of those air filters in your heating system.
Right.
What a MERV 13 filter is it just goes up into that space where it filters the air.
Okay, so
it's
a different type of air filter, but a lot of the other things are physical improvements. I would suspect that,
right,
they're there.
Yeah, so we can't put a MERV 13 in every classroom, and so the classrooms that don't have that same type of filtration system, we're bringing in portable air filtration systems. And so that's something that will last for years, although filters, the actual HEPA filters inside that air filtration.
All right, that makes sense. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka City School Superintendent Fred Van Fleck. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, along with Baywood Golf and Country Club. Fred, the physicality of what you're going through. You know, now you've got the ag building that's up. You've got some kids back, some kids not back. Are you going to go with some kind of a, I know Fortuna's back normal, regular straight up, and I think Ferndale also. St. Bernard's got rid of half of the chairs inside the classrooms to guarantee the separation and everybody's that way. We've heard stories of other districts being creative also. At what point are you going to try to make it, or at least recommend, that each kid at least has their feet on campus each day? Whether it's all at once or spread out or for an hour and a half session, whatever it is, so that you start to get that the socialization components that are now being referenced by so many people that are missing and that are starting to cause some issues.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, it just comes down to a judgment call. And the things that we have really used as our guiding principles as we've made recommendations to the board is, number one, what is going to be in the best interest of student and staff safety? Number two, what is going to provide the best instructional experience for students? Number three, what is going to be in the best interest of child care for staff and our families? And then finally, number four, whatever decision we make, it can't bankrupt the district. And so that one's a little bit weird, and let me give an example of that. Like, for instance, we couldn't decide to double our facility size and hire twice as many teachers so we could split all of our classes in half to have everybody here full-time. So that wouldn't really be an option because it would bankrupt the district.
Sure.
So every time that we've gone to the board and made recommendations as far as what we should do with our students, we've brought it through the filter of those four things. And so far, the board hasn't been able to get past the safety of staff and students. And right now, they believe, and have provided direction for us as staff, that is the number one piece, and they don't want to err on the side of potentially somebody getting hurt. They have lightened up as far as students coming on for interventions, and that's why we have students coming on now in those equipment-dependent classes. And then they're prepared to potentially take that next step, and that's why it's coming up for discussion at our meeting on a week from Tuesday as far as more students coming back. What I see is probably a recommendation coming for me at that point is bringing all of our elementaries back and then up through sixth grade, because those are real sixth grade that are in middle school. Those are what are called self-contained classrooms. Those are classrooms that are taught by one teacher, and they have one specific credential. And so to me, that is a good next group to start with bringing back on an AM-PM schedule, which means that the students would come in, half the class would be here for a morning session, the other half of the class would be here for an afternoon session. And I see that likely being my recommendation to the board on Tuesday. And then the board's going to have to make a decision, again, using those four tests that I talked about earlier on what they think is going to be in the best interest for our community.
One of the things, and I know we had discussions and as well as, you know, everybody in the community, the balance or the determination between the economy versus health, you know, maximum economy, don't worry about health, maximum health, don't worry about the economy. You guys are kind of in a little bit different boat because you're secondary to the economy. But are you starting to hear those discussions in the educational circles also about health versus the kids' socialization and being kids, you know, engaging, interacting, things of that nature, instead of being, you know, kind of put away and sheltered?
Yeah, that's the exact conversation, because remember, my number one thing I said next to student and staff safety was what is in the best interest of the students as far as educationally. Nobody argues that in-person instruction is far superior to the distance learning model. So that is the core of the conversation right there. And, you know, in your other terms, you could say public safety versus the economy. In the school system, it's public safety versus the education of the students. And the thing that's so important to me right now, and I'm scared to death about this, is we do not need a generation defined by COVID. And if we're not careful and we stay out in distance learning for too long, we're going to end up with a generation defined by COVID. And if you think about some of the classes that I'm extremely concerned about, number one are the early classes, like the kindergarten classes. It's nearly impossible to teach a kid how to hold a pencil virtually. It's nearly impossible to teach a kid, I should be a little more nice than kid, sorry. It's a little more, it's nearly impossible to teach a student how to write the letter A virtually, because without having that one-on-one guidance right there with the student, it becomes very difficult. And then you start thinking about some of the classes as you get into higher level classes that build upon each other, say Algebra 1, Algebra 2, some of our advanced placement classes, and the challenges that come with teaching those classes distantly is just incredibly difficult. And I have to say, our board recognizes that, and we talk a lot about that, and it becomes that conversation of at what point does the need of that in-person instruction outweigh the safety piece.
Right, right. Or influence it enough to make a decision that's different than what status quo is. KINS, right. News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. So, Fred, a quick status update about the Albee Stadium. I know that there was a lot of discussion about the field, drainage, ADA, stairs, seats, all that kind of stuff. Has this put a hiatus on that?
Not at all. We're running full steam ahead for Albee Stadium, Bug Clooney Field, and the softball field, which will also include the demolition of the old welding building down there and the removal of those two portable classrooms that the ag classrooms are in. In fact, yesterday I was just on the phone, on a virtual meet with our architect and Paul Ziegler, our assistant superintendent of business services, where we're finalizing our plans for that rebuild. What's going to happen is it's going to be artificial turf on the football field. Track will be completely redone. We have a couple of ad alternatives that will be in the bid. And the first ad alternative will be the outfield of Bud Clooney Field, and setting that up to be an all-weather practice facility for soccer and football. So that way we're not sending our soccer team off to other facilities to practice on. So we're hopeful we'll be able to get turf out there. Another ad alternative will be turf for the infield of baseball and the outfield of softball. That's what those respective coaches were hoping for. And that's going to depend on if we can get that within the budget. And when I say turf, I'm talking artificial turf. There's also going to be a new restroom facility with the ADA compliance, along with a snack bar facility that will be located down there on the north end of the field, kind of where the container is, where the boosters have been serving out of now. And then a new team room facility built on the south end of the field next to the existing team room. And then that existing team room will be modernized and fixed up. We are on track for those plans to be submitted to the Division of State Architects in November. And we are still pushing hard for a completion date of March of 2022. So that project is chugging along quickly. It's considered an emergency hardship project by the state as well. So we're going to be tapping into state dollars to match our local dollars on this project because of the drainage issue that we have out there and the imminent danger to students. Right now, the fields are open because we've gone in and done the ground penetrating radar to make sure that there are no sinkhole voids underneath caused by that culvert failure. But once it starts raining again, since we've had the sinkhole failures, we'll have to shut down the stadium and the baseball field again until next spring when we can do the same thing. But likely next spring we'll be gearing up for construction. So we're going to have a time period where we're not going to have a lot of field facilities out there.
Well, you know, San Jose State can come up and use Humboldt. I suppose that Eureka High could too. 20 seconds, yeah, status of Jacobs.
$100,000, that's okay.
Yeah.
20 seconds. What do you want to hear about?
Jacobs.
Jacobs. It's being abated and demolished. There are crews are out there right now taking out the asbestos that's around the heating systems and some up in the roof and some in the floor tile. And then also they'll be taking out the lead, which is in the paint. And then the whole buildings are coming down and being out. They should, those buildings, with the exception of one, should all be down comfortably by December.
Ah, Christmas present for one and all. Thanks for almost coming by, Fred.
Yep. We'll see you in person next time.
There you go, bud. And we'll talk with everybody else tomorrow.